Now, I'm really delighted to introduce to you Dr. Julia Lane, who is the NSF Program Director, Science and Innovation Policy. And she is the co-chair with Zilda Valdez from DOE of the Interagency Task Group that was commissioned under OSPP. She'll be highlighting the federal roadmap that's developed over the last year, as well as the results of a recent workshop that was just held. So I'm delighted to have you, Julia. So what I'd like to do is go over the roadmap that we produced. I think you've all shown the link to the Science and Science Policy workshop site in the invitation, but for those of you who are coming in remotely, is scienceandsciencepolicy.net. And so you can take a look at some of that. What I'm going to do is I'm essentially going to go through a very similar presentation to the one that we did, that Bill Valdez and I did there, which is to give you an overview of the science policy road mapping exercise that the interagency group did, and you can see that on the PowerPoint is actually on that scienceandsciencepolicy.net website under workshop materials for those of you who are coming in remotely. And what I would like to do is just give you a sense of what that roadmap was about, and then talk about the themes and ask for your input. This is part of the outreach that we're doing for the community from the federal agencies. So on the website, which I hope you've all had a chance to look at, there is a copy of the roadmap per se, and I very much hope that you've had a chance to read that. That's the document that was submitted by the interagency group. The interagency group, I should tell you, was set up in response to Dr. Marburger's call at a AAAS forum and then at an editorial that he wrote in Science, which basically said that it's really important as a science advisor to try and figure out what the scientific basis for science policy is. That currently, his concern was that when he had to make decisions about where to invest and what areas to invest in, he was basically working from anecdotes. He didn't have a fully-fledged science policy infrastructure within which to operate. And he used the example of economists for understanding economic policy as an example of the infrastructure that he would like to see developed. And so he called for the development of a social science and science policy. And two things really came out of that. The National Science Foundation established a science of science and innovation policy program, and I direct the investigator-initiated research component of that. Linda Carlson in Science Resource Statistics, which produces the tones that you see on science and engineering indicators, is heading the statistical component of the advancing the science and innovation policy. Then the second thing that was done was to establish this interagency group. And what the interagency group was trying to do was to respond to that national imperative that Dr. Marburger called for. And what the imperative is, if you think about it, is we really need to develop rigorous tools, methods, data for analysis, and really need to think about the federal government's investment strategy using the best tools available. And that's going to be particularly true given the very difficult economic times that are ahead of us. In other words, we don't have a lot of money to waste. We want to use it at a efficiently as possible. So what kind of infrastructure would you want to develop? And this is a picture of my co-chair, Bill Valdez, and Dr. Marburger, and my boss, Dr. Lightfoot, and Kathy Olson, so on, who were there in Helsinki at Blue Sky Forum. Yes. Okay, so the Interagency Task Group, which is what I'm going to be talking about today, was started almost 3 years ago under the OSCP, under the Committee of Science, National, the Social Behavioral and Economic Sciences Subcommittee. And we did four things, and I should say my co-chair, Bill Valdez, was here throughout before me, the person who held the fort for NSF and did a fabulous job was Kay Housman-Fearing, so I shouldn't take the full credit for this. And there were 17 agencies that were involved. But we did four things. We did a literature review and a synthesis. We sent a questionnaire to federal science agencies to get a sense of how they did science policy. We took a look at what the data issues were upon which the science policy, the empirical evidence for science policy is based, and then we developed the roadmap, which is now available for your review. And then we also had some outreach to the community. Now, this was a federal effort, so we're talking about federal science policy here. I should make it very clear what that the context is. And obviously, when you're developing a federal roadmap document, you're not allowed to release it to the public until it's gone through the concurrence process. But what we did do is we had a number of outreach sessions at various venues like the AAAS, American Evaluation Association, and so on, to get kind of general feedback to the direction of which we're going. What we did was we structured the roadmap around what we saw as three major science thematic questions. In other words, one is we felt that science policy needed to draw on the literature and advance the literature on understanding science and innovation. So kind of we need to understand what's going on. Then we needed to we had a whole set of questions under investing in the innovation process. I'm trying to understand the impact of what the different investments were. And then how can you use that information and advance the science-to-science policy to address national priorities? So the structure of the roadmap is the national imperative is getting an empirically based foundation for science policy. We have these three themes, and underneath those three themes are a set of science, 10 science questions. And out of those, we got our findings and then our recommendations. So that's a fairly standard structure. I wanted to give you a sense of what that looked like. So the first theme is trying to say we need to understand the science and innovation enterprise, if you like. And there were three core questions associated with that. What are the behavioral microfoundations? What explains technology adoption and diffusion? How and why do communities of innovation form and evolve? So those are really the behavioral, the underpinnings of understanding science enterprise. What we're going to do later on today is ask you to break into groups to discuss some of these questions. And I'll talk about that as we get further down the path, but I just wanted to give you a sense of what the roadmap was about. And we had a set of key findings. The ITG, the Interagency Group, found that there was a lot of research in different areas, that is economics, social psychology, cognitive psychology, sociology, political science, and so on. And while there is 30 years worth of literature in the field, also in terms of science policy, but within the federal context, it hasn't been applied to the study of science and innovation. And what we really found very strongly was there wasn't a lot of communication between the academic and the practitioner community in the federal science context. And that was really an important finding. Then, as a result of taking a look at the questionnaire that we sent out to the federal agencies and indeed the experience of sitting on the interagency group, what we found is, not surprisingly, the federal government's a vast enterprise in its own right, but what we found was is that science policy is very siloed and the practice is very heterogeneous and unsystematic. And that's a real challenge because if you think about the scientific enterprise more broadly, scientific communities go across agencies, and the results of research by scientific communities needs to be drawn on by different federal agencies rather than in a piecemeal effort. So, you know, NSF might increase funding in a particular area, but that the results are seen in isolation from what NIH does with DOE Office of Science and so on. We had a set of questions that percolated up from the community and within the ITG associated with investing in science and innovation. So one of the overarching questions is, what's the value of publicly funded knowledge? In other words, if someone comes to the director of OSTD, the president science advisor, and says, what is the value of science? How should he answer that? You know, how do we measure that? What's the left-hand side variable, if you like? And obviously that's a complex question, but we don't have a good answer as to the how to value the social spillovers, the economic impacts, and so on. Another major question which we are asked all the time as science agencies is it possible to predict discovery? Not surprisingly, if you think about science as an investment, and the America Competes Act makes it very clear that the notion of science for the taxpayer, at least in part, is to generate discovery and to create competitive firms, make America more competitive, that's the title of the act. Is it possible to predict discovery? Of course, the answer is no, but at least as far as we know, but that is an overarching conceptual question. Is it possible to describe the impact of discovery? In other words, can we say that if a scientific advance is made, can we describe what the impact of that is? And then, obviously, of major importance to science policy, what are the determinants of investment effectiveness? And that's a fundamental question, if you like, because what really want to know is if there are some things that we can do to make investments in science more effective, then we'd surely like to be doing those. And so what we found was that many agencies, NIST, for example, has led the way in much of this, although many agencies have made heroic attempts to try and figure out the value of the publicly funded knowledge, it's pretty agency specific. There isn't something that goes across all federal agencies. And in terms of trying to decide the impact of discovery and innovation, agencies are using very different approaches and tools, and there wasn't a lot of consensus as to what was the most appropriate. And some agencies do very little, some agencies are very mature in what they do, but there are a lot of open research questions. And then, of course, the national imperative kind of is what drives scene three. And as I'm going through these, you might want to be thinking about what groups you want to provide input into. The breakout groups after this and this afternoon are going to be associated with these themes. Theme three is, how could you use the science policy to address national priorities? Number one is, what impact? We say, and there's a great deal of anecdotal evidence to support this, but that we say that science is critical for advancing innovation and competitiveness, but what impact is there? We talk a lot about the importance of the scientific workforce. How competitive is it? How do you get at those measures? Because of course that's important, has been an important science policy goal. And another very fundamental question is what's the relative importance of policy instruments in science policy? So, for example, the traditional answer by science agencies has been spend more money. Right? That's been the policy instrument that's been number one. However, that may not be necessarily the only policy instrument. You might think about having more transparent funding decisions. You might think about having a different intellectual property structure than the one currently in existence. You might think of having different patenting rules. You might think about differential tax policy. So rather than sending more money to science agencies, you might issue tax credits. You already have some tax credits for R&D. You might have tax credits for investing in intangibles, for example. That's another way of going. But what are the alternative policy instruments and what are their relative importance? That would seem to be a fundamental question for science policy. And what we found in particular, and actually found in all of these questions, was that lack of data was a real hindrance to developing an empirical foundation science policy. And we also found there's been very little investment in understanding funding. So out of those findings, we have a set of recommendations. And again, we're going to ask you to weigh in on this. I should say that we're out of the December 3rd and 4th workshop, and also out of this one, we're going to synthesize all of the input and review it in the interagency group come out with a final set of recommendations that we hope to use to set science policy priorities internally. So we need an interagency research program to address those 10 scientific challenges. And one of the key issues that came out of that was, what kind of research data infrastructure do you need to develop to advance our understanding of the 10 science questions? So the fourth thematic work group is to describe that data infrastructure. So those of you who are into data and understand the data infrastructure, it'd be great if we got your input into that one. And then another one was to invest in models, data, and tools and metrics using the evaluation template that was part of the roadmap. We thought it would be extraordinarily helpful, just as we have a national economic framework to understand the impact of different economic policy interventions on the national economy, it would be very useful to develop a national innovation framework. We talk about an innovation ecosystem. We understand that the direction is not a standard one-way input-output relationship. We understand that there are very complex interrelationships, but being able to describe those so that the science policy community has a context within which to understand the relative effect of different interventions would make a lot of sense and provide scenarios and options. And we also recommend that there should be an interagency entity that could help foster these, not do the work, but foster that kind of those sets of interactions, and in particular to nurture the community of practice between researchers and practitioners. And in the roadmap, we have an evaluation template that describes the tools, models, and data that are currently available to science policymakers. And then we looked at where they were in terms of their potential value and the potential cost. And the green says they're in great shape. The red says a lot of work needs to be done. So that gives us a sense of what's available right now and where investments need to go. So the purpose of this workshop, just like the purpose of the workshop that we had a couple of weeks ago, was to get comments on the roadmap, to get the implementation, and to promote this community practice. What we did, not for this group, but for the workshop that we had 2 weeks ago, was we actually had people register and log in. We decided to dispense with that process for this workshop because the logistics were just not feasible. But I'm going to share with you how that works and some of the feedback that we got in the next presentation. And what we really wanted people to do was to provide initial feedback about whether we got the roadmap right, whether we were way off mark, and what we should have done differently. And what we have done then is also developed a set of decision tools around those themes, and what I'm going to show you is the paper copies or the online copies that you can fill in. Again, we didn't have the framework, the infrastructure to set up a online decision tool for you guys in this project. But essentially, the way in which those decision tools are set up, there are four themes, the three scientific themes and then the data theme. And what we are asking you to do is to give us the high-level impact on, you know, did we get the questions right? And rank what you think is most important. And then if you think something else should have been added into that theme, please let us know what it is. Then we go through the findings and the recommendations and the tools, try and get your feedback as to what you think ought to have been in there, right? Because the interagency group did what it could, but very much what this is about is getting outreach funds. The data group is the one group that differs from the other three, and what we did was we developed a tool that tried to get input on what we thought were the five major questions that were necessary to be answered to develop an empirical platform. So there's a set of questions about measuring and tracking the federal funding of science. Right now, there is nothing that tracks the impact of the federal funding of science through the innovation ecosystem, not within agencies and not across agencies. So developing that kind of infrastructure, we wanted to get your feedback on what you thought was important. Data on measuring and tracking the scientific workforce. Then, of course, an important outcome that certainly every science agency is interested in is how do we get a sense of what the impact of our investments were on scientific income outcomes? And then, in response to the a major national imperative, how do we get a sense, how do we measure and track competitiveness in the science, in this ecosystem? And then, of course, it's absolutely critical if you're developing a data infrastructure for the science decision-making, you need that data infrastructure to be accessible for analysis by researchers and by the science policy community. So what kind of access modalities make sense? So that's another one of the two questions. So where we're headed is we have a wiki that you can see on the website. That's being seeded by many of the responses to the questions this last workshop and, again, this week's workshop. We're hoping that will help support a community of practice. We are going to be implementing the results of this workshop in a number of different ways. We also are going to try and identify where are the best investments in terms of tools, models, and data that could help support that national imperative. So that's kind of where we're headed. And let me just give you a sense of what people said. So in the workshop materials, I'd like you to do in the breakout groups is to work on these different decision tools and create the information. I'm going to give you some of the pre-workshop results. Let me go through and give you a sense of what we got on the pre-assessment tools. So, for example, when we get to the tool that you're going to do in the breakout sessions, here there's a Word document, and it goes through the findings and the recommendations, and then the individual tools. And what we'd like you to do is to fill out the Word document and just either give it to Susan or to me at the end of the day. Give you a sense of how those work. On the pre-assessment tools, what we did was we asked people, first of all, did we get the right 10 questions? And the most, about 75% of people said yes, and about 25% of people said no. And of the people who said yes, a lot of them said, well, yeah, you've got it right, but it's only a start. You know, we need more modeling. It's good to have those questions, but we need to have different perspectives. Another group said, yes, but you kind of missed some stuff. The kind of things that you missed was, how do you assess science management? What about the role of mental competition? What about the humanitarian dimension of why we use science? And what's the value of public investment in internationally collaborated research? You can see they kind of group naturally into that set of questions. Then another group said, well, yeah, you got the right set of questions, but they're not detailed enough. You should have thought about the critical role of professional organizations and societies. What about the methodological challenges? What about the practical applications and so on? So I actually just, as an economist, I disagree with the last statement, so I'm not going to give it the honor of being read. you can see that people were very engaged when they read the roadmap. We got some very strong responses. Others said, no, you got it completely wrong. It's just way too simple. You're too reductionist, too focused on inputs and outputs. The scope is too narrowly defined, although, to be very clear for you as we're going through this, this is a federal science policy roadmap, not science policy broadly written. No, you missed important questions. You need to think about knowledge delivery. You need to think about the negative outcomes of innovation. And, you know, how dirigiste do you want to be? Should there be a national industry in science policy? There was some pushback that this was a socialist enterprise. Then others said, you fundamentally misunderstood, you completely missed the boat. You missed something very basic about what goes on with science. You overemphasized psychology. So some people thought we overemphasized psychology and others thought we overemphasized economics. And then others thought, what about the right size of the enterprise? Although, to some extent, that's one of the key issues in theme three. Others thought, you got it wrong because you were too narrow. There are other priorities in which science policy is important. We focus in on the scientific enterprise in the roadmap, but obviously science plays a major role with health policy, education policy, energy policy, and so on. So they said we were too narrow in this area. A number of people in the breakout groups later also felt we really missed it because we were too US-centric. We lacked a global perspective. Another question that we had is who should take the lead? And since this was in Washington, 60% thought it should be the federal government, but there were strong arguments for all of the different areas. Some felt the federal government should take the role because it's the only place that has the resources to do something like this. And what's the role of Congress was another question. Others said academia, basically because academics are smart and they can figure out the answers to these difficult problems. And then others thought that we should be able to take both. some said international, which basically recognized the fact, I believe it is a fact, that the Europeans, the Japanese, and the Koreans have actually been thinking about these issues for a lot longer, or maybe not thinking about it for a lot longer, but doing science policy in a systematic way at the highest levels of government for a very long time, and that we should look to them to take the lead and we should follow. And then people said, actually, what you need is a combination of all of these things. And then we asked what people thought about the data question, and I think I'm running short on time, so I'm not going to go through the data questions, but we had a set of questions. Do we have data on creativity? And about a third said they exist, but most people thought they were of lousy quality and there wasn't enough access. They think, do we have data on workforce? The community, there were about 250 people who were responding to these. 30% said there's data on workforce exists. Now think about this. These are science policy experts. They were selected to come to this meeting because they were recognized as national and international experts. And despite all the pontificating we hear about workforce issues, scientific workforce issues, only one-third of those people thought that the data, A, existed, and one-quarter thought that it was of high quality. Data on federal funding, 60% said those existed, but only about half thought it was accessible. Data on scientific papers, that's reasonably well accessible. Data on high-impact papers, only one-quarter thought it was accessible. Data on doctoral students. 60%, more than 60% thought that was accessible. And then we got very substantive. This was an extraordinarily thoughtful group of individuals. And we got a lot of the meat and a lot of the reason it's going to take us some time to synthesize the feedback. I very much hope to get the feedback from you guys. Is the written comments were so thoughtful, right? That the questions, I should say, are, you know, I have spent a few years in a survey research background. These are not survey research questions. They have not been cognitively tested. They weren't developed by a social psychologist. This is not a scientific instrument. It is intended to elicit discussion and thought. So I want to make it clear that I don't want you worrying about the structure of the questions, but more that this is intended to elicit feedback. We also asked about models in the pre-assessment tool. People thought it had high value and low risk, relatively low cost. Risk modeling, about the same. Options modeling, about the same. Agent-based modeling, people thought it had high value, relatively low risk. Case studies, these are the same kind of variation. Peer review, the value of peer review for using science policy. The Delphi approach, not a whole lot of excitement about that. And then we asked for a set of questions about, we got the feedback on the qualitative approaches. And then feedback on the metrics. And you could read this at your leisure. I'm really just giving you a sense of the quality and the value of the discussion that we had in the previous workshop. So, a priori, we found there was a lot of variation in the feedback that we got on the different elements of the decision tools, and we were really impressed by the quality and the thoughtfulness of the feedback that we got, and how many people responded. And that really helped set the stage for the feedback on the tools that you guys will now start to work on. Susan? That's kind of a very quick overview of where we were. And my understanding is now we go into breaking out into separate groups.